From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
As part of our continued commitment to focus on all things related to schools, this week on School Talks, we have Jason Gillespie, the Walters Family Director of Education Programs from the Detroit Institute of Arts, Jamie L. Corey, Language Acquisition Administrator from Warren Consolidated Schools, and returning to School Talks is State Board of Education member Dr. Judy Pritchett. Rounding out the program will be some thoughts from me about the importance of student attendance in the life of a child. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us on the program now is Jason Gillespie, the Walters Family Director of Education Programs for the Detroit Institute of Arts. Welcome to the program, Jason.
Thank you. Thank you, Robert. It's my pleasure.
So first and foremost, what does the Director of Education Programs mean for the Detroit Institute of Arts and, more importantly, its connection to the area schools?
Yeah, well, it means a lot of things. First of all, it means I manage the education department at the DIA. And what that means is our commitment to the local communities to provide education services, specifically around three general areas. Our field trip program, where we offer both guided and self-guided field trips to the DIA. Last year, we had over 60,000 students who attended a field trip at the DIA. It also includes free educator workshops. Those are both public and private workshops. I was lucky enough to see you at one last week, our Educators Night Out in the Midtown area, which was amazing. We had over 250 teachers at the DIA for that. And then the third thing is our learning resources, our lesson plans and scavenger hunts and things like that that connect the curriculum to the world-class collection of the DIA. You know, one thing I want to emphasize is we are really lucky. We have an amazing art museum in Detroit. It's probably fourth or fifth best in terms of both the quality and the depth of our collection. I mean, we rival art museums in New York and California, and it's such an honor to be able to connect students in our area to that collection.
Yeah, and you know, during my time as superintendent, our students made many a field trip to the DIA, and help the School Talks listeners take us through what a field trip might look like for a group of third or fourth graders.
Yeah, we actually have a partnership with Warren Consolidated, and that we bring all their third graders down. So we have a paid staff that give tours, field trip tours to students, unlike other museums that rely on volunteers or docents. And we do that so that we can assure the quality of the field trip experience. We can kind of standardize that. So they'll come down and we have a variety of tours, whether they're just more general introduction to the collection or more open-ended tours that focus on critical thinking and close looking. We have a tour based on social-emotional learning. We have another program called Power in Art, where we use the collection to engage students in conversations around power and identity and perspective and things like that. So we really run the gamut, and that's because of the strength of the collection. I mean, we have pieces in our collection that come from 4000 BC all the way up to contemporary art, so we can really span history as well as cultures from all over the world.
You know, it really is the ultimate example of a 3D textbook. You know, you can read a history textbook about anything in the past, but to be standing before some of these sculptures and pottery and all the great stuff that's there is so much different than trying to capture it from a textbook or even watching it from a video. There is nothing like being there in person. So with respect to that thematic approach, whether it's social, emotional, or power and identity, do your educator workshops somehow help prepare teachers to take advantage of those kinds of exhibits for kids?
They do. And, you know, we really offer two kinds of workshops, a private workshop where I or someone on my staff will work with a principal or a superintendent or curriculum director to structure a specific kind of workshop that they need. But then we also offer public workshops. We do them usually on Saturdays, about one a month. And those tend to be connected to a specific exhibition that we have opening that might be relevant for students, or maybe to a Heritage Month that's going on, like Black History Month or something like that. As an example, just on Saturday, we had our Art of Dining workshop supporting an exhibition that we just opened, and we've partnered with the Arab American Museum to bring both students and teachers down to experience our exhibition, which is all about Islamic art with a focus on culinary arts, and then take them to Dearborn, and they get to experience the Arab American Museum and see kind of the connections there. And we've been really intentional about trying to connect with local communities like Dearborn and Hamtramck so that they can see themselves in our collection and in our art and how we present it.
What a fantastic opportunity for the Tri-County. And I would imagine you draw people far and away from just the Tri-County area, given the importance of this collection.
We do. I mean, we get people from all over the world that come to the DIA for our art. But my work does tend to be focused on the Tri-Counties. I'm glad you brought that up, Robert. I would be remiss if I did not mention that all of the services that I just mentioned, whether they're field trips or they're educator workshops, are free of charge for schools, teachers, and students in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb County. And that is due to the generous support of the voters in those three counties, who just recently renewed a 10-year millage that supports a good chunk of the operating budget of the museum. And in return, residents in those counties get free admission to the museum, their schools get free field trips, we offer free senior programs, free community partnership programs for those three counties. It's a great resource.
No question at all. With us right now is the Walters Family Director of Education Programs, Jason Gillespie, from the Detroit Institute of Arts. So, Jason, I know there's a lot of exciting workshops and things and exhibits coming up. Tell us about some of the stuff coming forward that people can see at the Institute.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, in addition to our permanent collection, we have some amazing exhibitions. I just mentioned one, Art of Dining, which is all about Islamic art. Over 200 pieces in this exhibition that we borrowed from the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. It's a focus on Islamic art, but culinary arts. So in it are these amazing sufras, which are kinds of table coverings, serving dishes, old manuscripts and recipes from the 1600s. It's a beautiful show. And again, as I mentioned, we've been trying to be intentional about connecting with specific communities in our area that might find that exhibition relevant. We also have our Ofrendas exhibition, which is probably our number one visited exhibition for students in the museum. It celebrates El Dia de Muertos. We have a teacher workshop coming up for this on Friday, where the community is invited to submit ofrendas or altars that are set up in our central exhibition space that commemorate maybe a loved one or even an idea. They're really amazing, and we'll get 10,000 students that will come through that exhibition. They tend to be students that are taking Spanish, and we have some learning resources available on our website for ofrendas. We also have, it's been up for a while now, 7 Mile in Livernois, which is an exhibition focused on a local artist. Livernois, right. Her name is Tiff Massey, and she is this incredible artist from that neighborhood. She was the first African-American female to get a metalsmithing degree from Cranbrook, and she started off making jewelry, but then she took her jewelry and made it architectural in scale. So her work speaks about adornment. How do we adorn our bodies? How do we adorn our buildings? How do we adorn our culture? And that's going to be up through the end of the school year, I believe, until May or June. And then opening in December, we have Painted with Silk, which is an exhibition that focuses on needlework from the 1700s and 1800s, mostly done by girls in school, because back in those days, girls were taught, if they had means and were lucky enough to go to school, were taught to read, write, and sew up until about sixth grade, and then their education stopped. So we have these amazing samplers that are going to be up that tell, morals or even biblical passages But they're beautiful works of art, and they'll be up starting in December.
That's just a fascinating summary of what's coming forward at the Institute. And you mentioned the Dia de Muertos. That's the Day of the Dead, correct?
Correct.
The day after what we know as Halloween.
Right, yes.
November 1st.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that for our School Talks listeners. So much more at the DIA than we have time for on this program, but I did want to take a minute and thank you, Jason Gillespie, the Walters Family Director of Education Programs at the DIA, for some really neat information and the continued support that you provide to all the students and schools in the Tri-County area. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you for this opportunity.
So coming up after the break, we'll be joined by Jamie L. Curry, Language Acquisition Administrator for Warren Consolidated Schools. You're listening to School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Once again, at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Jamie L. Curry, Administrator of Language Acquisition for Warren Consolidated Schools. Welcome to the program, Jamie.
Thank you. I appreciate being here today.
Wonderful. So in your role in Warren Consolidated Schools, I think a good place to start would be to help people understand how many different languages are spoken by the students who attend the district.
That's a great question. We have over 14,000 students in our district. Of those 14,000, we have five main languages, the top being the class of languages that include Arabic, Assyrian, and Chaldean. And we have almost 3,000 students who speak at least one of those languages. Most of our students speak either Arabic and Chaldean or Arabic and Assyrian. The next most populous language is Bengali, and we have about 2,000 students who speak Bengali, or Bengali is spoken in their home. In third place is Vietnamese. We have roughly 400 students in the district in which Vietnamese is either their native language or their home language. And then we have a tie for fourth place, and that is Ukrainian, which has really surged in the past few years, as well as Albanian.
Of those main languages, when you move away from those top five, there are many, many other languages and ethnicities in the homes of students there. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have over 70 languages spoken in Warren Consolidated Schools. It's a very diverse community. We have really seen a huge influx of Bengali speakers. Our Bengali population has increased twofold, and it continues to increase. We expect that our Bengali speakers in the next 10 years will outnumber our Arabic, Chaldean, and Assyrian speakers. Additionally, we have seen an influx of Ukrainian refugees, and they are quickly becoming our fourth most populous language, and we are thinking it's going to surge into third place.
Are there any particular state or federal recommendations for trying to provide service to so many different languages?
Yes, there are. And there are some fairly new recommendations that have been backed by OCR, by the Office of Civil Rights, recently. For our students who are considered English learners, so these are students whose parents have identified that either a home or primary language is spoken in the home and it's other than English, we then are required by law to screen these students on their English proficiency, on their listening, speaking, reading, and writing. If they fall under a specific score, they are considered English learners. And these students will vary from students who are new to the country to students who may have been born here, but perhaps English isn't as fluent as a student that comes from an English-only household. As a result, we have a variety of programs to address our students' language needs. We have sheltered programs for students who are new to the country, meaning that all of their core classes are taught with other students who are new to the country, and they get grade level content, but language support so that they can access that content. We also have a vast pullout program, meaning that our students are serviced by English language qualified teachers. So they have a specific certification for our newcomers and our students who aren't as fluent in English. as our native speakers, and they pull them out of class and they provide targeted language supports.
When you screen a student for placement, it's almost like a placement test to determine where's the best fit for them with regard to what level of English they're capable of speaking. Is that correct?
Correct.
In that same thinking, once they're placed into a particular level, how do they get out of that as a measure of learning the language?
At this time, they take an annual test called the WIDA Access or the WIDA Alternate, and they have to score a 4.8 out of a scale of 6 on that test. It's a composite score. If they score a 4.8, they are considered exited from the program and no longer a, quote, English learner.
For a refugee coming into the district, until what age can a refugee remain in a K-12 public school?
There is new guidance coming from the Michigan Department of Education stating that a refugee student can remain in a K-12 institution public until the age of 21. So that is different than our typical general ed students. And school districts at this time are sort of planning how that's going to look and where we are going to, in fact, continue these students' education so that they can earn their diplomas.
I can remember back as an administrator, sometimes we would get a student refugee who might be 8, 9 years old and had never, ever been in school yet because they were either in hiding or traveling, trying to get somewhere away from their home country. And considering an 8-year-old coming to a district such as yours with no formal school experience before that, the adjustment is enormous for them. So those extra years really provide a level of support for them to attain that level of proficiency. Help us understand, Warren Consolidated Schools offers the seal of biliteracy. Could you share with us what that is and what the requirements are for the district to attain that?
We're very proud to offer the seal of biliteracy, which is endorsed by the Michigan Department of Education. For a student to earn the seal of biliteracy, it is literally a seal that students can adhere to their diploma, and it indicates that they are, quote, officially biliterate, end quote. And in order for them to obtain this seal, there's a variety of things that they could do. One of which is if the student has attended 1 year of school outside the U.S. from the 6th grade or beyond, and they have transcripts or some record of that schooling, they immediately qualify for this seal. Another way that they can obtain it is through an authorized test. So, for example, the AP test would be a good example of that. We also have a new test. The MDE worked with the Chaldean Community Foundation to develop a test in Chaldean, which is very exciting. So we're going to have a number of students this year who will hopefully be taking the Chaldean, quote, test out to obtain their seal of biliteracy.
And so moving away from students who come to you with different languages, as a curriculum in the district, what world languages does Warren Consolidated Schools offer?
At this time, we only offer Spanish. However, other languages are under review. We're being very intentional in our choices as to which languages we want to offer our students.
And, you know, that ties to an important question, and that is, from a world perspective, what world languages would you consider are the most in-demand globally?
The most in-demand globally languages at this time are Mandarin, Chinese, Arabic. We also have a huge need for Spanish. That is absolutely right there at the top. Mm-hmm. And, of course, English.
Jamie L. Khoury, Administrator of Language Acquisition, I really appreciate this information. Makes me sincerely appreciate the challenge before educators working with such not only a diverse population of students, but the languages that they bring with them. I'd like to thank Jamie L. Khoury for joining us on the program. And after a word from our sponsor, we will have State Board of Education member Dr. Judy Pritchett. You're listening to School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
In a report released recently from the Michigan Department of Education, there shows what I would consider a significant gain in attendance rates among Michigan school children. And in education, there's been a substantial concern with chronic absenteeism, which is really a problem across all 50 states, and whether it's due to the pandemic or whatnot. Dr. Pritchett, tell us a little bit about the recent report from the Michigan Department of Education that talks about how Michigan has improved its attendance compared to the rest of the nation.
We are in Michigan working very, very hard with our local districts to provide strategies and assistance in making sure that children are in school. Certainly, when the pandemic hit and school buildings had to be closed, when we began to reopen buildings after the pandemic and felt as though it was safe enough for them to come back and for staff to come back, we saw some chronic absenteeism crop up across the state. Michigan Department of Education, with support from the State Board of Education members, realized the importance of making sure students were back in school. And so there was analysis done and lots of outreach to the districts related to strategies that could be used to help parents understand, A, the importance of their child being in school, and then trying to figure out what was going on. In many instances, it was just getting back into the routine. Some districts decided to hire attendance officers, not to go and be the big heavy, but to knock on the door of the home and to strategize with the family on how do we get your child back into school. We also found out that there were some social emotional needs that were going unmet with many of our students. And that has enabled us, through help with the legislature and the governor, to provide some funding for districts to provide that support for those students who need to work through some issues, be it loneliness or maybe some school phobic issues, so that they too can get back into the classroom. We are very proud of the fact that Michigan currently is showing the best increase in this particular issue as far as student attendance goes among 42 other states in the nation.
That's a good point. I read the report, and it reports that chronic absenteeism fell almost 8 percentage points during the 22-23 school year, which is really one of the first full years for many districts out of the pandemic. And for us to be on that level, that trend of improvement is a really good thing for schools. And when you consider also the number of virtual options for students where they don't have to attend school, to be able to have that level of increase getting them back in school, I think is a substantial victory for schools. In fact, in the report, State Superintendent Dr. Michael Rice said that children need to attend school regularly to learn, to graduate, and to be able to continue into post-secondary education. And when you think about how social the education business is, it makes you appreciate you really and truly can't replace a teacher in front of you in a classroom from a long-term perspective, especially from social-emotional growth. State Board Member Dr. Judy Pritchett is joining us today. Many school districts have an attendance policy. For most schools, attendance absences or tardies become absences, and they accumulate for students. And do you know, can a school district take academic credit away from a student for being absent from school?
I do know that that is part of some school districts' policies. I guess I would strongly recommend that those policies be examined. Each individual case of a student who is chronically absent, this is not a student that I'm talking about who's maybe missing periodically. This is a student who is refusing to come to school. I was an assistant principal and a principal in a high school, and those students are clearly struggling with coming to school for a myriad of reasons. And so I guess I look at that as we need to look at some positive reinforcements to help that student feel more comfortable in school. Certainly virtual options are out there, but in order to learn, there needs to be a social aspect also. I don't have a problem at all with virtual learning when we're not able to provide a class for a particular student or dual enrollment, et cetera. But I do feel very strongly in the fact that we're social beings, we're human beings, and children are no different, and they need that interaction with other children in order to learn.
And when you tie that back to the social-emotional learning perspective, I think for many of them, they became weakened, which challenged them to come back to school in the social setting. It's sort of a nice wraparound to the whole concept of how important schools are from a social-emotional learning perspective. In fact, in this report, the improvement Michigan made, the Michigan graduation rates in 2023 were higher for all 17 student categories tracked, which really shines a positive light on the hard work happening in our schools, especially given how important it is that children come to school. I want to thank our special guest, Dr. Judy Pritchett, a member of the State Board of Education. I look forward to continued conversations with you about all the good things happening in our schools. Coming up after the break, in light of our conversation with Dr. Pritchett about attendance, I'd like to share some thoughts with you about the importance of school attendance for children. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Point Moran Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Welcome back to School Talks. I'd like to continue our conversation about student attendance and how important it is, not only to individual students, but entire communities. In fact, student attendance is something we often take for granted, but attending school regularly is vital for a child's academic success, their personal development, and long-term opportunities for them. Yet across the world, and even despite the improvement in our local schools, children are still missing out on their education. Why is this happening, and why does it matter so much? First of all, when students attend school regularly, they build a strong foundation for future success. Daily classroom experiences contribute to a child's academic achievement, and missing even a single day can mean missing out on critical lessons or falling behind in key skills. The impact goes beyond academic performance. Just consider for a moment a child who's learning their multiplication tables in elementary school. If they're not there consistently, their ability to build on that success in math is very difficult. From a social perspective, as we know well, schools also teach social skills. They teach critical thinking, and they provide a structured environment for personal growth. There's just something about schools, attending school regularly, getting up, going to school on time, having lunch in the middle of the day, and all of the other structures that are in place are so important for students. In fact, research shows that students who miss too many days of school are more likely to struggle with reading by the third grade. They're more likely to fail classes in middle school, and many of them eventually simply drop out of high school altogether. And this is not just about today. This is about setting the stage for a child's entire future. Regular attendance is directly linked to a student's likelihood of graduating, going to college, or work or into the workforce, and even securing stable employment later in life. For those of us who've had successful careers, the habits formed in school, punctuality, responsibility, and perseverance, are the same qualities that employers value in the workforce today. In short, being in school every day gives students the tools they need to succeed academically, socially, and eventually professionally. Now, what happens when children miss school too much? We call it chronic absenteeism, and it's defined as missing 10% or more of the school year, and it has severe consequences. And if you consider an average school year as somewhere around 180 days, that would be having a student absent 18 days of school. And when students fall behind, it becomes harder for them to catch up, and over time, this can result in a cycle of failure. They become frustrated, disengaged, and less likely to participate in learning. This increases their chances of dropping out of school altogether and closing that door on those future opportunities. Beyond academics, chronic absenteeism also has long-term consequences on mental health and behavior. Children who are frequently absent are more likely to develop anxiety, depression, and feelings of isolation. In some cases, they may even be involved in risky behaviors like substance abuse or criminal activities, especially when they're not in school. Also, absenteeism impacts the entire school community. Teachers have to spend extra time helping absent students catch up, which takes away from their time they could be spending with the rest of the class. Schools receive funding based on attendance rates. So when students miss school, it can lead to fewer resources for the entire school, especially in the state of Michigan. It's clear that consistent attendance doesn't just benefit the individual student, it affects the school, the entire learning environment, and the community. So, why are children absent from school? I can tell you from my experience, there's no single answer because absenteeism is often the result of a complex and varied number of factors, many of which, sadly and quite frustrating, and they are beyond the child's control. For example, health issues. Illnesses, both short-term and chronic, are one of the most common reasons students miss school. Conditions like asthma, diabetes, or even mental health challenges like anxiety and depression can lead to frequent absences. In communities with limited access to health care and resources, these conditions often go untreated and make regular attendance that much more difficult for students with those health issues. Another major factor in student absenteeism are family challenges. Family circumstances play a significant role in school attendance. Children from low-income families may face challenges such as housing instability, food insecurity, or even a lack of transportation to get to school. Some students may have to care for younger siblings, work to support the family, or unfortunately, face domestic violence issues and trauma at home. In such cases, education understandably takes a back seat to their survival. Another important factor, the school environment. Sometimes the school itself can be a factor in absenteeism. Bullying, cyberbullying, discrimination, or a lack of support can make students feel unsafe or unwelcome at school, leading them to stay home. And if students feel disconnected from their teachers or the curriculum or extracurricular activities, they almost always become disengaged and unfortunately find little reason to show up and attend school. Another major factor at the forefront for us in terms of absenteeism are mental health issues, which are increasingly recognized as a significant factor in student absenteeism. As I mentioned, anxiety, depression, and stress, especially among teenagers, can make it difficult to attend school regularly. The pressures of academic performance, peer relationships, and societal expectations weigh heavily on many students, leading to absenteeism as a means to cope with these pressures in the school. And unfortunately, as we know well, that becomes a vicious cycle for them. And finally, one other factor that causes student absenteeism are community factors. Broader societal issues like poverty, violence, and a lack of community resources all contribute to absenteeism. In areas where crime rates are high, parents might keep their children home to protect them. When schools lack resources, students may feel that their education is not even a priority, contributing to their decision to not attend school at all. The solution to absenteeism is pretty complex, and addressing it requires what I would consider a holistic approach. Schools must work with families, healthcare providers, and community organizations to identify and address the root causes of absenteeism. Interventions could include providing free transportation to school, offering mental health services, or creating a more inclusive, supportive in-school environment for those students feeling left out. Teachers and school staff can also help by creating a welcoming, engaging classroom where students feel safe and supported. And finally, school attendance is not just a statistic. It's a reflection of a child's well-being, their opportunities, and the health of both their school and their respective communities. And by understanding why students are absent and taking proactive steps to remove those barriers, we can continue to help all children succeed, both inside and outside the classroom. And those are some thoughts on student absenteeism. I'd like to thank Jason Gillespie from the Detroit Institute of Arts, Jamie L. Khoury from Warren Consolidated Schools, and Dr. Judy Pritchett from the State Board of Education for joining us on the program today. We'll leave it there until next week, but remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.